Hello, creative people. Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. So I am owner and founder of my company, I Am Creative, and I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and empower people, especially adults, to own their talents that come in so many different forms. So this podcast was born from my company, I Am Creative, and to me, it's the perfect space to live my mission and talk to people that have different jobs, hobbies, and interests with various experiences and perspectives. And the conversation is structured around the same three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? And then we have a free-flowing conversation. And then we see where it goes from there. So my inspiring guests have varied from musicians, handwriting specialists, entrepreneurs, real estate agents, organizers, and so many more. And by sharing their stories, the intention is to expand the societal definition of creativity and reinforce that when you give yourself permission to explore and express daily, you will feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest today, I am so looking forward to speaking with. Her name is Jennifer, or JJ Jank. She helps high growth teams deploy high performance strategies so they can get more done in less time. And by leveraging neuroscience and productivity research, dream teams learn to work smarter, not harder. So Jennifer, welcome to the space.
Hi, Hollis. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so happy that you're here.
Me too.
So thank you. And you got on very easily. So that's wonderful.
Actually, it took me a few minutes. I thought, you know, I better kind of try to get on a little bit early in case I can't remember what I'm supposed to do. So
Well, you remembered well. So, so I was looking at, well, first, you know what, let's start with a would you rather question, and then I'm going to ask more about you, and then we'll dive into everything.
Okay.
Okay. So, Jennifer, would you rather be able to control the weather or talk to animals?
Talk to animals.
That was fast.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I've had pets pretty much, I mean, I had a dog growing up. I've pretty much had pets my entire life, and I do talk to them.
Yes.
And on occasion they do talk back.
Yeah, I get it.
But I think, you know, I think there's still probably a little bit of, you know, my human connection with them kind of going on there. So it would be interesting to actually talk to them and hear what they're really saying.
I know. I totally feel the same way. And, do you know the movie at all, the animated feature, like Wallace and Gromit?
Yes.
Yeah. One of our cats is definitely Gromit. He just has that deadpan look where he's like, seriously? Are you really asking me that?
Yeah. That look of, are you serious, human?
I'm sorry. I know that wasn't very smart. I didn't mean to offend you. So, okay, great. So this is going to be a good conversation. So before we dive into the first question, I would love for you to share with everybody more of what you do. I was watching your video on your website, and it just really, I was just kind of smiling as I was watching it, because I know that you work with, you know, people within the business world. And I love this whole topic on, I know that there's more to you, but the whole perfectionism aspect.
Yeah.
And so humans are imperfect, and where we have control and where we don't. And yeah, if you could just share a little bit more about what you do and more of that, that would be amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, I am a recovering perfectionist myself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's kind of on my mind. And I think what really kind of helped me change from being a perfectionist, because I kept hearing everybody would say, oh, everybody makes mistakes, it, you know, and I'd kind of think, well, I know, but not me, right? I'm a high performer, not me. mm-hmm. And I, and I finally got to the point where I could say, but I know I make mistakes. I know I don't do everything right. And the problem with perfectionism, if you look at it from strictly as a productive person or as a working person, if you look at it strictly from that viewpoint, being a perfectionist means that you can't ever learn from your mistakes, because you're so hung up on trying to be perfect and you can't say, okay, well, that was a mistake. I did that wrong. Or the results were wrong. Maybe I did it right and the results were wrong. But now I need to go back and I need to, you know, figure out what the lesson is here and then fix it. And that had really come along with some of the, at the time I was ghostwriting, I still do some ghostwriting. I was ghostwriting some books on project management, and they were talking about agile project management, which is basically instead of going for this whole long project that takes a year and then you get to the end and find out that something went wrong. And so it doesn't exactly meet the specs that you wanted. You do an agile one where you work on something for a month, you throw it out into the market tells you what's wrong with it, and you take it back and you do the fixes. So it's really this idea of being able to say, I do make mistakes. I'm not going to get this right. I'm going to get a good enough version out there to get started. And then I'm going to take feedback on what I've done and make it better.
Yeah. Isn't that market research?
That too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and that's a beautiful thing. I mean, you also like brought up the concept of high standards and isn't, how did you word it? You said there's a difference between, is it high standards and perfectionism?
Yep. Yeah, so exactly. So you can still have high standards and not be a perfectionist in the sense that you're trying to do the best that you can, recognizing that as a human person, the best that you can do isn't always going to be perfect. So Yeah, so really trying to go after, I'm going to do the best that I can. And if I make a mistake, I'm going to try to learn from it and move on. So I think perfectionism, especially for women, in business, really kind of stops people from doing what they want to do, because they really get stuck in this, I have to make it perfect. And so they're fiddling around with the font size on their lead magnet instead of just throwing it out there and letting people see the service that they have.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. See, in the art rooms, though, me teaching art for so long, we call it beautiful oops.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I like that. Beautiful
the
oops.
Book, you know, there's a book called Beautiful Oops. And I read that and I'm like, oh my God, yes. It's a kid's book that I just love. It has all of these great interactive pieces where it shows like a coffee stain being spilled on paper. And then you lift up the flap and it shows how you can turn it into something else.
Yeah, cool.
So in the art room, when the kids would come in and we would go through the expectations for the day, that was always there. It was like, beautiful oops. What happens if we make a mistake? We try these different things, because it's going to happen. You're going to make mistakes.
Exactly.
You don't just take whatever you're doing. And sometimes you do dismantle it to then put it back together, but it doesn't have to be the first reaction.
Right. Yeah. And it doesn't have to, because sometimes that's going to take too long anyway. So putting something that's imperfect out there is really the key to getting more stuff done, is just saying, you know, it's good enough. Is it perfect? No. Would it take me another million years to make it perfect? Probably. Do I have that kind of time? No.
Right. And I love what you say too about big companies. Like, just because they're a big company doesn't mean that they have it down perfectly.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah,
the concept is there and they just put it out there. And like you said, they test it and market it and play with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of the new, paradigm, because in the last century, yes, I'm old enough to have worked in the last century. I kind of hate saying I'm a person from the 1900s, but well, there it is.
It's true, right?
But back then, I mean, I remember when I was working, it was really for big companies that it really was about trying to get everything perfect and trying to make it absolutely right. and having these really long project management cycles and then being really disappointed at the end because you didn't get what you thought you were going to get because of the structure of the project management. So, but the new sort of paradigm in Silicon Valley really kind of started this was, okay, well, we're going to have a good enough product. We're going to throw it out there. You guys are going to tell us what's wrong with it. Well, you know, we'll keep iterating until we get it to what you guys want. Because the other thing is that you might not, and this may not be the same for art people, right? Because you're going to make what you're going to make. But in business, sometimes what you think you want to make is not what the market wants. Mm-hmm. And the quickest way to find that out, the fastest way to get that answer is to throw it out there and have everybody say, nope, that's not what we want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that you find out really quickly. And within whatever, I mean, if we're talking visual arts or that kind of thing, it's the same kind of thing. You're not going to be everybody's cup of tea. You might be nobody's cup of tea.
Right.
People might listen to that and be like, that sucks. Or they might look at it, or they might taste something that you cooked and they're like, oh my God, that's horrible. And you're like, okay, so I'm either just doing this for myself, or if I am putting it out there in that kind of way, then yeah, like you said, there are different iterations to go through.
Mm-hmm. And finding your audience too, because they're definitely, I'm a big reader, and they're definitely, as well as a writer, and they're definitely books that I really like, and they're not for everybody necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, that's why they have all different flavors of ice cream, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so yeah. So, okay. So good. This is going to be good. Thank you. So first question is, how do you define creativity?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and because I know a lot of people think of creativity as being able to draw something or make a painting or make a sculpture or, you know, carve a piece of wood into something interesting, or me writing is absolutely creative. But really, creativity is using different things that you know about and kind of harnessing different areas of information within your brain. So when say, for example, a tax person is working on a tax return, right? That's all logical, kind of rational thinking. But when they kind of pull away from that and they're sort of thinking about other ways to solve it, you can bring in this creativity to see things in a different way. And that's also something that I think people don't appreciate quite yet about the modern world, is that linear logical thinking a lot of times really isn't enough anymore, because the robots have already done that. So you actually do need more creative solutions to problems, even if they're business problems or they're things that you don't, you know, even if it's not an art problem, you can still approach it creatively and kind of get all the different regions of the brain kind of working together, which is not what happens when you're doing this kind of logical, rational thinking.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for proving the validity of what I am, like, mission to get out there. Mic drop. I appreciate it.
Well, I feel kind of bad, because a lot of times I'm making these arguments, and I just kind of feel like I want to say, you know, art has its own reason for existing. I don't need to say, oh, you should do art or be creative because it'll make you more productive at work. But that's what a lot of people want to hear. Like, they don't care. But if you say, oh, well, you know, you could actually be better at doing your job if you got more creative, then they're like, oh yeah, okay, well, now I'll be creative.
Well, because you're putting it into a context that makes sense. It's like a concrete thing. I think otherwise it's so abstract.
Yeah.
Because people spend so much time, in my opinion, they spend so much time in what they can't do, and they don't see themselves in that kind of light because of that whole societal definition of what creativity is.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, creativity is like exactly the things that you listed in the beginning, you know, of what people might think. But the definition of creativity is the formation of an idea or an object.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing this all the time. So right. Like you're saying, is in being able to have good communication skills, taking an idea from your from your head of what you're thinking about and forming it, having it come out through your mouth, and then brainstorming ideas, these creative solutions on how to bring it to life, and then either doing it yourself or collaborating with others. And, you know, whatever that looks like, it's all a creative process. It's pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And it seems like it's one of those things where that really does kind of separate us from the animals. Because they used to say that, you know, humans using tools is what differentiates us from animals, but it turns out there are different animals that use tools. Mm-hmm. But I don't see, I mean, I, you know, I love my cats, I love my dogs, but they're not particularly creative. They're a lot of fun, but they're not, you know, they're not sculpting the Sistine Chapel while I'm asleep or anything.
Well, I do have to say, it is, we had, when we lived in this one particular place in New York, this small apartment, and we slept up on this high loft, and there was a desk underneath, and there was shelving that kind of went all across the top part of the wall. Mm-hmm. And in order to get to us, to wake us up, the cats would go through a maze, basically. Incredibly creative. They jumped up on one thing, which led to another thing, and then they walked across this other thing and then jumped across and then there was a lot of creative problem solving going on there. And they were like, okay, I'm hungry.
I need to get to the person with the opposable thumbs.
I can't do it myself. I'm not out in the jungle. So
yeah,
that's what kind of came to me. So tell us about what you've done, if you've always been in the business world, or, you know, where you kind of come from and where you're kind of at now.
Yeah, I actually was in the business world for most of my adult working life. Spent about 20 years in the finance industry, and the last decade of that was in personal financial planning. And it kind of, I'd started looking into neuroscience and learning more about the brain, just because as a financial planner, I wanted to know why the clients weren't doing the things that they were supposed to do.
That's so smart.
I mean, because we would present these plans and we would say, okay, if you do this, right, you're going to have great retirement. You'll be fine. If you don't do it, well, then you're going to be in trouble. And they knew that. They understood it when we talked to them about it. But actually putting the things in place was a little bit more difficult. And a lot of that is behavioral finance. So I'd started in on learning more about the brain. And then I just kind of kept going. And I was, the whole time I was in business, I was always a writer, because I always had that kind of creative outlet, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of kept up. I'd taken workshop here, I'd go to a conference there and all that kind of thing while I was working. And then I ended up working for money, writing for money. I was a ghostwriter, and I still take on a few projects here and there. And they're mostly nonfiction books. I've also written my own books. I have one on investing, one on divorce finances, and one on making the leap from employee to entrepreneur, because that's what I did. Mm-hmm. And so I'd been writing all that time, and I just eventually had kind of gotten to the point where financial planning really wasn't doing it for me. I mean, I think it was kind of a midlife crisis where you just wake up one day and say, this is not fulfilling. This is not the impact that I want to have on the world. This isn't helping me be the person I want to be, all that stuff. So that was, at that point I had launched my own business.
So how long ago was that?
So that I started my own business in 2017, but it's changed a little bit from then. Cause when I first started, I actually, was working with, divorce finances. And again, kind of got to the point where I thought, well, this isn't really, I could do the work, but it just didn't feel like it was my work to do. Mm-hmm. And then with that, and of course I'd continued on with all the neuroscience stuff. And so I got to the point where I thought, you know, really the message is about productivity and using your brain in the right way to help you work instead of working against you. The problem being that the modern world is almost completely set against what the human brain needs to be productive. I mean, almost everything the hustle and grind culture is not good for your brain. Bragging about getting 3 hours of sleep, you know, right. Not good for the brain, all this stuff. Not what, if you want to really be productive or really do your thing, paying attention to modern culture is not going to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's so true. It's crazy. We do it's that whole, you know, drink a ton of coffee, you know, take your Red Bulls, do all this kind of stuff to keep yourself going, and not actually like listening to ourselves and like taking a break. Like, you can't be productive when you're having a meltdown.
That is very true. And I know that from all the meltdowns I've had.
Yes, me too. Me too. So I'm curious. So this whole thing in studying the neuroscience of the brain and telling people to, in order, you know, giving them all of the information to help make better decisions, and us not making those decisions. Why is it?
Right. Why aren't you doing the right thing?
Why did you just do the complete opposite of what I just said?
I mean, I actually, and most of the time they didn't mean to do it, but from time to time, I remember this one client that I had, and they'd call me up and they weren't overly wealthy. Let's just put it that way. And they already had two houses and they wanted to buy a third and didn't really have the money for it and so forth and so on. And so I was on the phone with them, saying, because I'm not going to tell somebody how to spend their money. What I'm going to tell you is, okay, if you do this, it's going to work out really well. If you do that, it's going to be terrible. And you choose which one you want. Mm-hmm. Right. But I'm not going to actually say to you, you must do this. I'm just going to say, this is the way to be successful. This is the way not to be. It's up to you as to which one you want to do. But this one client, I'd be on the phone with them. I'd explain, hey, you don't want to do this, blah, 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 blah. A week later, I get the call, oh, well, we bought that third house. I'm like, oh. And at some point, I think I actually had the conversation with them. I said, you know, you don't listen to the advice that I'm giving you, which is fine, but should you be paying for this advice when you're not going to take it, you know?
So, but honestly, what do you think that is? I mean, why do you think, within what you were doing, why are people doing that?
Yeah. Well, some of it really is, I think a lot of the, and I, let me just kind of gather my thoughts here. I think a lot of it, again, is kind of modern culture. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Amazon movie Generation Wealth.
I didn't.
It's good. Lauren Greenfield directed it, and it's semi autobiographical, but she's got some other people in it. And they were kind of talking about how back in the last century, in the 1900s, people might've wanted to keep up with the Joneses, but the Joneses were maybe a little bit above them in terms of money. And maybe their house was a little bit nicer and maybe they had a little bit of a nicer car. But it wasn't like today when you turn on the TV and you're watching the escapades of somebody who made $20 million last year. Their life is not even comprehensible to most people watching. But it's kind of the human nature. It's neuroscience, right? To compare. Yeah. We're social animals, and so we had to develop to be very conscious of hierarchy, social hierarchy. So a part of us is always like, well, where am I on the hierarchy? Am I closer to the leader? Am I far away from the leader? And a lot of people don't realize they're doing it, but there's absolutely a part of us that does that. It's like an automatic kind of social hierarchy thing. So if you kind of have in your head that the influential people, the big people, the big bosses are having this kind of lifestyle, then it's almost kind of human nature to try to appropriate that lifestyle for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And like you're saying, like with social media and everything, and having 24-hour access basically to things, it just kind of keeps it going.
Yeah. And the other thing too is I mean, this, some of this neuroscience is fairly recent, right? Because I mean, I remember when I was growing up, they told us that the human brain couldn't generate any new brain cells, that once a brain cell died, that was it. Turns out that was totally wrong, right? We, brain cells grow, and we, our brains during sleep, this is why 3 hours of sleep is not good, is because your brain's actually strengthening some pathways and pruning back some other neural pathways, a whole bunch of stuff that goes on basically while you're unconscious. And, and a lot of those things, of course, affect productivity and creativity and all that kind of stuff. And so it really needs to happen. I feel like I was going somewhere with this and now I don't remember.
Well, it
I'm sorry.
No, I do that all the time. So it's very, yeah, thank you. Makes me feel normal. Yeah, but I think that's, isn't that kind of like a brain fog that it creates? Because we get ourselves, you know, we're tired, we're kind of running on empty.
Mm-hmm.
We're running on the caffeine or not giving ourselves enough nutrition and really feeding our body in a healthy way.
Absolutely.
And we think, yeah, we're doing amazing. And you're like, no, you're actually doing like a really bad job here. Like this is, you're going to crash and burn. And your body, my brother has a saying, you know, my body talks and I listen.
Oh yeah.
And your body's going to get to a point to where it's going to be like, well, you're not working for a little bit.
Yep. Yeah. That happened to me a couple of times when I was working. I would just push and push and push. And then I'd end up sick. So I couldn't go to work. Go figure. But yeah, all of that. Yeah. All of that stuff. It's kind of amazing because a lot of helping your mind work is really doing the things like exercise. You know, the brain needs oxygenated blood to nourish it. It needs nutrition. It needs a good amount of sleep. I mean, there's a lot of kind of behind the scenes stuff that people don't really think about. And then we've made, I think, kind of such a fetish of, you know, being on our phones and checking emails and all that kind of stuff. And all those distractions are really bad if you want to be productive or really even creative and make anything. I don't see, as an artist of any kind, how you could sit there and work on something while every 2 minutes you're looking over at your phone to see, you know, what your Candy Crush is doing or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. And the beauty of having these conversations, it's what I love so much about it, is because the mission of my company, you know, like I've said in the opening and before, is that it's, you know, all about the expansion of what the definition of creativity is. Mm-hmm. So people can see themselves within that umbrella. So people can feel empowered to be able to realize that they have a voice. I mean, to me, creativity is expression, that it's a voice, that everybody has one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like when people own it and they feel validated and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm good at something.
Yeah.
Like I didn't realize, I thought that this was for the people dancing up on the stage or the people in
right.
days. Or like, wow, I'm actually validated on something. Yeah. I've seen their lives change because of it. And, you know, first I was going to say the whole way they hold themselves, but the way they hold them, the way they think, they change their thinking, the way that they physically hold themselves, it all has a domino effect on their bodies or on their life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of funny that you say that because I had been writing some books on confidence and, you know, in general, they say, oh, well, you shouldn't fake it till you make it. But actually, confidence is one of the things that is really good for faking it until you making it, because it turns out that just standing in a confident way, speaking in a confident way, having a discussion with somebody, and just looking confident, no matter how frightened or whatever you are, actually does make you more confident. Yeah. And then when you feel more confident, of course, you go out and you explore some new things, you do some new things, and you're a little afraid, but you hold yourself up high and you stand, you know, equally weighted on both feet, and you look at your person that you're talking to in the eye, and you just build confidence from there.
I love that, because the word that I was thinking of actually before saying anything was the word balance.
Yeah.
And then you said holding your feet equally weighted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Finding that balance. I mean, don't you think finding that balance in life in general? I mean, with the whole talking about productivity.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I try to help people do is I want to help them be very productive at work so they get done what they need to get done. But then they've saved time so they can take that extra hour and go home and have you play with the cats, play with the creative cats, or play with the kids, or go have a drink with a friend, or whatever it is. And the funny thing is too that's another thing that the brain needs. It just can't. The human brain is not a computer. People like to think of it as a computer, but it's not. And a computer can run 24/7, but a human brain can't. And so it needs some time where you just kind of let the logical, rational part just kind of go off and take a little nap while you're playing or having fun and enjoying yourself. And you're getting all those, you know, fun neurochemicals, all the pleasure chemicals are coming in. It's like, yeah, let's do this again. Your brain actually needs that. It's not good for the brain to just keep grinding it out 10 hours a day, never taking any rest, you know, never having any fun with your family or friends. Mm-hmm. Because we talk about people, I think a lot of people understand that play is necessary for kids and puppies and kittens, right? But it's also necessary for adults. Right. And I sometimes think of creativity as just play too. It's like brain play.
Exactly. Exactly. It's giving yourself, again, the word permission in order to let that guard down and to play around, either if it's in the workplace, play around with ideas, mm-hmm. you know, kind of banter back and forth with people. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like loosen up and let that not be so controlling and gripping so tight.
Yeah.
But then also what you're saying too is to actually step away from that space and do whatever it does that makes you feel good, whether that's, you know, whether it's something with somebody else and sitting and having a drink, hanging out with your friends, talking to people, or whether that's going and doing exercise or yoga or having a special drink of some kind that just makes you feel good, like something in order to nourish yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of funny how, and I think maybe some of it is our puritanical culture where we kind of think that if it feels good, then it must not be good for us. Right.
Right, right. So messed up.
So, yeah. So we're thinking to ourselves, well, we can't play as adults because that's not work and that doesn't feel right. That can't possibly help us work when in fact the brain needs you to play. Yeah. Not playing is basically putting yourself in opposition to your own brain, which doesn't make any sense.
Oh my gosh. I love this. So listeners, play.
That's right. That's right. When you get off this podcast, go play.
Go play. And if you're not sure what that looks like, it's downtime. It's not necessarily, it's not just sitting in front of TV and watching Netflix. Like that's not playing. It's some kind of engagement with something that you're doing. You can add to this, Jennifer, like I see it as something, again, you're doing for yourself, where you're taking yourself on like a date, where you're doing something that you've been wanting to do. You're in your house. You are making yourself a meal that's like nourishing you and something you've been wanting to do. Maybe you're cleaning, maybe you're organizing, maybe you're taking paint and throwing it on a piece of paper.
Right.
And you're like, it doesn't look like anything, but it doesn't have to look like anything.
Yeah.
Or it's hanging out with people and connecting, like some kind of go out and play paintball. I mean, I know we're in COVID, whatever, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
What would you want to add to that?
Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, the one thing I would say is that what play is not is scrolling through your social media feed. Play is really, getting out there and doing something like a hobby. People like to do needlework, which is also a very creative endeavor. Even just going out, people, and again, we're in COVID, but like if you are a sports person and you have a sports ball that you play, I'm clearly not athletic. If you have a sports ball, going out and playing sports ball with your buddies, you know.
Take the ball and do whatever it is that you do.
Yeah. Whatever it is you do with that ball, whatever size ball it happens to be that you play with, whatever. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I mean, I play with my cats because they're hilarious. Mm-hmm. And one of them is not quite 2 years old, and he actually does need a lot of playtime. And it's kind of funny because it's exactly like having, it's not exactly like, but it's quite like having kids, because the more you play, the more worn out they are and the easier it is to sleep. And it's the same for and it's the same for adults too, right? Like if you go for a really intense hike, you know, or you've been playing for a really long time, like the time you go and play sports ball with your buddies, right? You sleep really well that night because right. you're just tired.
Well, isn't it? I mean, it's true though, like the endorphins, like everything gets moving and then you have more clarity and then you can bring that to your space of whatever you do, mm-hmm. like for your living, you can come to that space with this clearer head and be like, oh yeah. I mean, I find that it opens up, you know, it opens up the space for all these ideas to flow in.
Absolutely. And it really, I think, also helps you see opportunities that you might not see if you're kind of going around with your head down and not really paying attention to things because you're grinding away, or the times that you're not grinding away, you're on social media, so you're not seeing really what's around you. And once you stop doing that, you're like, oh, well, there's all this other stuff that I could do that looks interesting that I could learn about or whatever it is I want to do with it.
Yeah, I love how you just said that with where you made the reference of having your head down. Because I really see it, even if people physically don't have their head down, it's still in this like myopic in this space where it's you're focused on this thing and I have a deadline and I need to get it done and all the other stuff that goes along with it, but you're not paying attention to what's around you. Which mm-hmm. is a lot of times where the answers are. And again, your body is so restricted and so tight that it's just closed off.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of play between the body and the mind, actually. And that was something that was new to me after I started learning all of this neuroscience. Like I'd always kind of figured, well, there's the brain and then there's the body. And the brain always tells the body what to do. And that's not at all true. There's a lot of feedback between the two. Which is why faking it till you make it works with confidence. Mm. Also, if you force yourself to smile, even just moving those muscles in your face, even if you don't feel it, can make you feel happier.
I love that.
Because it's this feedback, because what's happening is your face is making, you know, happy motions. And so your brain says, oh, well, the face is making happy motions, I must be happy.
My God, I had a podcast on Friday and you just made me again think of Happy Trees. What's his name? The painter.
Yeah, I can picture him. Bob Ross, was that,
yeah,
was that him?
Yeah. Again, I couldn't remember his name before. And it's just like, yeah, like here, you're happy.
Here's your happy little tree. We're just going to put a couple of happy little trees in here.
So if you, when you smile, you're making happy little movements.
Yeah. And your brain's like, oh, must be happy. And that's it's another thing that they say to do, because there's a lot of automatic sort of feelings and emotions kind of come up and we don't really have any control over those. We just have control over what actions we take. But the body's response to stress and excitement is actually quite similar, right? You get that speeded up heart rate. You might be breathing faster. Feels like your pulse is pounding. Yeah. And so you can actually change the way that you feel about it if you tell yourself it's excitement and not fear. So I don't particularly have a fear of public speaking, but I know a lot of people do. So when you get up there and start feeling all the butterflies and everything, just say, oh, this is excitement. I'm excited about this. Mm-hmm. And it takes away the fear because your brain goes, oh, excited. Okay. You know, because mm-hmm. it can't really tell.
Is it that simple, or is it that you have to repeat it multiple times?
No, it really, well, you probably have to believe it, right? To some extent.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can say, okay, I think because we normally what happens is we normally have a feeling and then we tell a story about it. Right. So we're experiencing the heart beating faster, you know, breath coming faster, all that kind of stuff. So we experience that and then we say, oh, I'm experiencing that. So I must be afraid. And then that just makes you afraid when you're standing up there in front of an audience. Yeah. Whereas you feel that experience and you say, well, maybe it means I'm excited. I'm excited to be up here. And if it's something, you know, especially if it's something that you've always wanted to do, you might be nervous about it, but you're like, oh, hey, you know, I'm actually spreading my message out to people. That's pretty exciting, really.
Right. Right.
And that can really just kind of help you shift your perception. So it's not that it's not that. Yeah. So sometimes you can kind of, just by shifting your thinking about something, you can actually change your whole perspective of what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So important what you're saying. And it just made me think about somebody saying that they had a chance to ask the speaker, Les Brown, like how he can speak in front of thousands of people. And he said, when he changed his thinking to, it's not about me, it's about thee.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's literally like channeled information he feels like that's coming through.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a big difference.
And that, yeah. So I literally, before I do things, I say, I'm like, that's amazing. It's not about me. It's about thee. It's not about, because when I focus on me, Hollis, and what I'm doing, then there's more awareness and more self-consciousness. But if it's about thee, if it's about everybody else and me wanting to be, help them be the better version of themselves or do something in a better way, then that's, my focus is on them.
Absolutely. And that's also good for your brain, because another thing that we humans are hardwired to do is to help other people. And again, that kind of goes back to how we evolved. And because back on the savannah, we could have been eaten by tigers or whatever big predators were out there. And so we had to band together in order to survive. And then of course we killed off all our own predators. That's another story. Yeah. But so our brains do, you know, we have this reward system with all the, all the happy chemicals. And so when we help people, the brain pushes out, some of the happy chemicals to say, yeah, let's do this. Let's do this again. It's part of the reward system. So when you are changing your thinking to, it's not about me, it's about how am I going to be of service to other people?
Yeah.
Now you've got your happy brain chemicals coming, and it's not so frightening. And I find the same thing for service-based entrepreneurs who really have a hard time with sales.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of thinking, you know, when you hear sales, if you think about the guy down at the used car lot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or, you know, some of these other like sleazy people or, you know, even on social media, people will slide into your DMs and then be like, oh yeah, well, why don't you hire me for this thing? You're like, no.
Right.
but when you sort of see it as, I'm not selling, I am providing a solution. This solution may or may not be the right one for the person I'm talking to, my prospect. So I'm going to get to understand their business and see if it's a good fit. And then if it is, then I'm actually doing them a disservice by not providing them the chance to access this service. And then if it's not a good fit, then I need to help them find somebody else who's going to give them the right solution. So when you turn it into more of a, how am I going to serve this person? How am I going to solve their problem? And it's not always going to be me who's going to be able to solve it. But now I'm focused on the serving somebody else. And so it's not sleazy and gross.
And it's beautiful. And like you're saying, it's that simple little twist. It's that simple little twist of the way that you're seeing it is like, oh my God, I'm so excited to be able to hear, to be able to listen to this person, see what their needs are and see how, you know, see a need, fill a need. If I can help them or if I can help them along the way. And of course, that doesn't mean like having to give hours and hours of your time to one person, but it's that whole change in feeling, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really makes a big difference when you move from what sales is, when you're really thinking about it. I mean, if you kind of think of sales as I need to push this product or item on as many people as I can. That's gross and salesy.
Yeah.
If I take it from, I might have the solution for somebody. I'm going to find out if it is the right solution, and I'll help them either way, either try to give them another referral if I can't help them, or if I can help them, I'll let them know how that works. But yeah, those are two totally different approaches.
And it goes back to that idea of it not having to be perfect.
Right.
So I think they tie in really nicely together. And we have to move to the second question. Because we're getting to the top of the hour. I'm like, okay, 7:45. So tell us, Jennifer, how do you incorporate creativity into your own life?
My main outlet of creativity really is writing. I enjoy writing a lot. And sometimes I do other things. I'll paint or do some other of those kind of stereotypical artist creative type stuff. But I do think that just trying to find different ways to solve a problem, like I said, is also being creative. So if I'm faced with something, I'm trying to think, well, what can I do? And that's kind of, so when I was thinking about productivity, it really kind of brought a couple of different domains together. It was about the neuroscience. It was about having worked in an office. And so that's kind of creative by pulling together all these domains and coming up with an idea. It's the same thing too for artists, right? Because you're pulling together all kinds of little different things to really pull out this idea that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like taking all these little bits and pieces of things or concepts or, you know, and putting it together to make sense of it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that whole creative problem solving process.
Yep.
And then even when I just popped into my head, there was a scenario, like when you think you have everything together, and it was senior year in college, and we had our senior show, and it was a group show, and I was in ceramics, and this one person had, which lesson learned, never put all of your pieces into one kiln.
Oh no.
For the show. So yeah, she opened up the kiln and all of the shelves had collapsed.
Oh no.
Pieces were all fused together.
Oh no.
And, yeah. So you can either be like, well, crap, there we go. Like,
you're right.
I throw my hands up, or jump in and create a whole new body of work, which she did. So
yeah.
I kind of think about that at times. And, you know, I think it can apply to anything that you do. Again, there are the mess ups and the imperfections. It's just like, okay, learn that lesson, chalk that up.
Right. Right. Not going to do that again. Because we don't learn from anybody else's experiences, right? We only learn from our own. So so I make a mistake. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that again. Yeah, I got that sorted. And somebody else will make a mistake and I'll be like, oh, that was terrible. And then I'll go make the same mistake myself. And then I'll be like, oh, okay, well, I'm not going to do that again.
Well, that whole thing of what, you know, you have to walk in somebody's shoes for them to really get it. I mean,
yeah,
that gratefully didn't happen to me.
Well, that's good.
But I got it. Like, I'm like, okay, never put all my work into one kill mode. Break it up. Okay, I hear that loud and clear. But there's plenty of other times where, yeah, it's true. You don't really know it until you know it. And like even thinking of little things like with my kids, they're getting older. My daughter's going to be 18 on Tuesday. And my son is 21. But yeah, I mean, you could tell them things just like when we were younger. You're told, you're like, yeah, right, whatever.
Exactly.
And then when something happens, you're kind of like, na 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 na. But that's not very mature. So
No. But I have to say, every time it comes up and I have to think to myself, boy, my mom or my dad was right. I am just so mad about that. again, not very mature, but
yeah, there's a thing. There will be times where I'm immature and I'll be to my kids, nah, I told you, but learn that that doesn't really work very well.
Right.
So, you're just like, oh man, I'm so sorry that that happened. Okay. What do you think the solution is? Yeah.
What do you think went wrong?
And my daughter will be like, just say it, mom. I know what you're doing. Okay, I was right, but okay, let's move past that.
Told you so, but let's move on.
Let's move on. Anyway, yeah, so is there anything else you want to add to that? Do you do any kind of, before pre-pandemic, any kind of traveling, bungee jumping?
Well, I do. I do like to hike. I broke my foot last year, so I hadn't been hiking for a while. I broke it like just before we kind of went into lockdown. So it was, if I had to break my foot, that was the right time to do it.
Okay.
So I hadn't been hiking for a while, but yeah, it's, and I do find hiking's really good to kind of turn things off and let ideas just kind of bounce around and run around.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I still have a few. I have a few trips I'd like to make, but I don't have anything scheduled or on the horizon at the moment.
Where would you tell me where some of the coolest places or place that you have hiked, and where would you want to?
Yeah, well, I actually did the and it was a while back. I think it was in my 20s. I hiked the Inca Trail up to Machu Picchu, and it was really interesting.
What was it like? I mean, is there really strong energy there? Back in the, when you were.
Yeah, I think so. And it was kind of neat because I went with this Canadian group, and I had gone by myself, and there was another woman who was going by herself. And so we shared a tent, and there were just lots of, there were only a couple of us Americans. There were a few Canadians and some English people and some Australians. And so it was really just kind of a nice group. And we all ended up, you know, really just kind of enjoying the days on the trail. I mean, because it takes, since we're not particularly fast, it takes you know, like 4 nights and 3 days, I think, on the trail to get from Cusco to get up to Machu Picchu.
Nice.
We had this amazing guide who spoke all these different languages, and he was actually a professor at the university there, but he just really enjoys going off on the trail and teaching people about the history of the country and the history of the people who used to live there. So it was a really good trip.
So you really got to connect with the people around you. Cause did you know anybody before you went?
No.
Yeah, which is a pretty brave. I mean, people could say that's a really brave thing to do. Like, you signed up for something that was, you're obviously, you know, an extroverted kind of person to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been married or anything, so I just tend to do things independently anyway. So for me, you know, going by myself on a trip is no big deal.
So where would you want, is there a place where you'd be like, just in general, to either hike or just to go, is there a place that you'd really like to go to?
Yeah, there are a couple places. One of them is Russia. I'd really like to go to Moscow and St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. I'd really like to go to Japan, and I want to do two things. One, I want to visit those, the more like the shrines that they have, kind of the more countryside shrines, and then also go to Tokyo because I just think that would be a lot of fun. And I'm not big on cruises, but I would kind of like to do one of those whale watching cruises up to Alaska.
Okay. That could be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been on a cruise before. My kids have with my mom, but yeah.
I've never been either. And then after, you know, even when there's not coronavirus, it seems like those big cruise ships always have like a case of norovirus going around or something. So I'm kind of like, I don't know about that.
I know. It's kind of like this whole, like, you're bound on the ocean with all these people and
right.
You won't leave them.
Right.
I don't know. I don't really like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I would have to take like a short one to see how it would go. Because can you imagine like booking a 2-week trip and hating life 3 days into it? You'd be like, oh, why did I do this? Yeah, right. That is something to avoid.
Get me off this boat. Wow. Well, I hope you get to do your traveling in the nearer future.
Thank you.
Yeah, those sound amazing. So since we're getting to the top of the hour, we're going to move to the third question.
Yeah, all right.
Which is, so why is creativity important?
Yeah, I think it's actually important for a healthy life. Really. I mean, I don't see how you can be healthy either mentally or even just your actual brain can't be healthy unless you're doing creative stuff. At least some of the time, it's just something that the brain likes to do. And, that's how you get into those flow states, right? Where you just doesn't even feel like time's going by because you're just so into what you're doing. And, creative projects are a really big stimulus for that kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 That just really does tie it all up. It's important.
Gotta do it. It's like breathing.
To be able to, yeah. I mean, I think about for so long, I'd love teaching. But mm-hmm. in a lot of the scenarios where I'd be teaching, it would be very stressful. And there was just a lot of stressful situations kind of going on around it.
Right.
And, with the kids that I was working with and circumstances. So I would always bring it home with me. Mm. And it would be hard for me, and being empathic, it would be very hard for me to differentiate.
Yeah.
When I would just feel that physicalness in my body of feeling heavy, of my joints hurting, I mean, mm-hmm. it would show its rear its ugly head in the way my body physically felt.
Yeah.
And in the way I acted towards other people, I didn't feel that smile.
Mm-hmm.
I try and put it on in the class, but it wasn't like authentic when I was coming home and interacting with my family.
Right.
It would be more stressful stuff. And then at certain points, my daughter looked at me and said, are you frustrated with me or are you frustrated with your work?
Mm.
And I was like, ah.
Ouch.
Sorry. I'm taking it out on you. Like, yeah. So it wasn't a healthy lifestyle at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which was lessons to learn too and be aware of. And for anybody listening, it's kind of like, maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be like, well, I have to quit my job and do something else, but it's the way your mindset also.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And how you take care of yourself, like in these things that we talked about, in doing for yourself and finding that balance and making that time for yourself gives you a whole different outlook.
Yeah, exactly. And because I've written this, at this point, I feel like it's a cliche because I've written about it so often, but when I'm dealing with a lot of women, entrepreneurs and women who own their own businesses, a lot of times they don't take any time for self-care. And I say, well, you know, when you're on the plane, what does the airline attendant tell you to do when the masks drop down?
Yeah.
They tell you to put your own on first. Do they do that because they hate your kids? No.
Yeah.
No, they do that because if you can't breathe, you can't help your kid or, you know, whoever it is that you're supposed to be helping. So, and it's the same thing with your brain and taking care of yourself. I mean, if you are not taking care of yourself, you do not have the resources to help other people in the way that you really want to. And the only way that you get those resources is by recharging. And creativity is a good way to recharge.
So perfect way to wrap it up. So our challenge to you, everybody, is really recognize what you're doing, how productive you're being, and how you're spending your time, and what you're thinking about, and whether you're smiling, standing in your confidence, standing equally on your feet, fake it till you make it, all of these things. Yeah, thank you for pointing all that out. Wonderful advice to put out to everybody.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
I am so happy that you took this hour to spend with me. I so, so, so appreciate it. And before we get off the call, can you please tell everybody how they can connect with you? I will put it in the in the bio of the podcast, but if you could tell people, that'd be great.
Oh yeah. So my email, which is my kind of primary method of communication, is jja@desertdivawriting.com. And you can also go to my website and see that video that Alice was talking about, which is desertdivawriting.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, again, Jennifer, thank you so, so much for taking the hour to spend with us. And listeners, so this is all about inspiring, connecting, and sharing stories. That's what this space is about. So please like, follow, and share so we can spread the word and just get it out there to be able to support each other and get our stories out there because we need connection.
Definitely.
So I wish you a good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever part of the world you're in, and look forward to connecting with you really soon. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Thanks, Hollis.
Thanks, Jennifer.